Hey, thank you for listening to Health Conspiracy Radio. My name is Nick Brannigan. First of all, let's get this out of the way. I broadcast this show live 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 5 a.m. Pacific time, 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. Pacific time, 8 a.m. to 9 Eastern Standard Time. I do it out of my apartment. There's no big fancy studio here, and sometimes you do your laundry thinking it's going to be done before you go on the radio. Has this ever happened to you? So I didn't want to be awkward about things. Just changed the setting on my microphone. But if you hear a noise in the background for the next few minutes, that's my washing machine. Just thought I'd throw it out there. Okay. Anyway, moving on. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit more about fasting. Yesterday, I went into the Food Babe article that took up most of the show. I'm going to give some resources for fasting, talk about what I'm actually doing, compare the intermittent fasting that I do to the 5-2 diet. I'm going to get into something pretty cool, too, that I came across last night. 3D Print Farm by none other than Mike Adams at naturalnews.com, and a new study finds very strong link between GMOs and vital organ damage. So that's I haven't read the study. We're going to go over the article, and then I'll read the study and give you more insight on it next week. But for those asking, this is a live show. There is a call-in number. You could ask questions, but the live listening audience is so low, it's not even really worth giving out. But if you have questions and you're listening to this in the archive version of the show, the email address is radio@healthconspiracy.com, radio@healthconspiracy.com, and feel free to sign up for our newsletter as well. Go to healthconspiracy.com. It's in the newsletter box. So we have 6 live shows on Blog Talk Radio, in addition to the Natural News Radio show, which could cross with some of the other shows, and Health Conspiracy TV, which is going to is recorded on Thursdays, uploaded on YouTube every Sunday. So for Monday and Tuesday, I'm going to air the audio from the first 2 Health Conspiracy TV shows. But going forward, that's going to be available only on iTunes and YouTube. So if you want to hear the audio from Health Conspiracy TV, go to our YouTube channel. Go to healthconspiracy.com. Click the Health Conspiracy TV category, which will lead you to our YouTube channel. Give that a subscribe. And if you're on iTunes, check out our iTunes feed, which is also available at healthconspiracy.com under the podcast feed category. That'll take you there, and you can subscribe to us on iTunes. If that fancies your pickle, whatever that means, I don't know. It's early. It's 4 a.m. on Saturday, 5 a.m. on Saturday. I wake up at 4. Either way, so going forward, that's how you can get the Health Conspiracy TV. That might change in the future. I might say, hey, I don't want to get up 2.5 hours before dawn anymore on a Saturday morning, and that could be a good time to air the Health Conspiracy TV audio feed. But regardless, no matter how you listening, how you choose to listen to us, to this broadcast, I appreciate you allowing me to be a part of your day. If you're in Las Vegas, check out my sponsor, Vegas Valley Organics, at getveggies.com. Hey, the washer stopped. It's getveggies.com. They are the premier source for certified organic CSA. I'm sorry, I'm distracted by the washer. They're your premier source for certified organic fruits and vegetables provided through their CSA program. So please check them out. GetVeggies.com is the website. Also, Dr. Somia Sridharan from LasVegasHomeopathy.com is the guest this week for Health Conspiracy TV. So look for that Sunday morning at HealthConspiracy.com. And I'm going to take that audio, play it for you Tuesday morning here with my interview with Dr. Somia Sridharan, also with my co-host for that show, Anthony Foresta, and that will also be played on the Natural News TV show, which will be a different version, a slightly different version of what you hear Tuesday morning. But anyway, if you're outside of Las Vegas, she does Skype consultations. So again, it's Las Vegas
homeopathy.com. Please check her out. And that's all I have. Show's over. No, just kidding. Big show, lots of stuff to talk about. Stay tuned. I'm Nick Brannigan. Health Conspiracy Radio starts now.
Is there a health conspiracy? You can bet your bottom dollar. Genetically modified food, poison in your tap water, toxic, tainted, and abused meat and dairy. Ingredients of mass destruction, poisonous pesticides and herbicides, deep psychological propaganda, food that makes your children go crazy. Do you think the FDA is meant to protect you? And just what in the world are they spraying in the skies? You have been a victim of mass programming, but it's never too late. Learn how to successfully make changes that last, leading you to a new life of health and vibrancy that most will never experience. Over the next hour, allow Nick Brannigan to share with you his research, expertise, and life experience. This is Health Conspiracy Radio.
Once again, thank you for tuning in. Now, yesterday I started to talk a little bit about fasting, what my fasting goals are, and the intermittent fasting that I do almost every day. So I'm going to get a little more detail into that. So let's start with the intermittent fasting. Intermittent fasting is when you eat only for a set amount of hours during the day. For most people, it's between 8 and 12 hours. For me, I choose 8 hours. I choose between 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., and I'm a little bit flexible with that 7 p.m. time. Sometimes if I'm out socially or out later than expected and I'm, you know, with friends cooking a nice organic vegan dinner, I'll go a little later. I'm not fanatical about it. I'm not a super stickler about it. So like I said yesterday, typically it's a smoothie. A wonderful green smoothie in the morning, wonderful green smoothie in the evening, and in between that, a nice big meal full of lots of mixed organic vegetables and usually some sort of legume, typically with a little hot sauce, a little mustard, a little pink Himalayan salt. Sometimes I spice it up with a couple different things. I've been getting from Vegas Valley Organic some good dried herbs. They have this Italian blend mix, which is phenomenal. I got some oregano. Also get the I got some black pepper out from Vegas Valley Organics. But I got black pepper and cumin, and sometimes a little garlic onion salt on there as well. But it's a pretty simplistic. And like I said, the benefits for me is overall just feeling better, not feeling bloated all the time like I do when I was eating four meals a day, thinking that's what I need to do to get muscle gain now that I've been lifting weights again since August. So I'm mixing it with the experimenting, you know, will I be able to gain muscle with intermittent fasting, with only eating during a set period of time. And on the weekends, so Monday through Friday, it's zero processed food. You know, sometimes I slip up and have something processed, always organic, always vegan. But I'm pretty good about not doing that. And then Saturday and Sunday is a little more flexible as far as the processed food goes. I like, you know, me and my daughter, we'll make some organic vegan pizzas, we'll pancakes or lentil tacos are about my three favorite meals, and then maybe I'll spontaneously have a snack when I'm at Whole Foods and or Trader Joe's or Sprouts. And yes, I still shop at Whole Foods. I'm not boycotting them. I'm just calling them out on their false marketing. New article coming soon, by the way. I said it was going to be out next week, but I didn't want to rush it. So that's going to be out soon, posted on Natural News blogs. But not to digress too much, getting back to the intermittent fasting, I came across a book called, which, you know, I'll get the exact name for you, but it's a different type of intermittent fasting than what I learned. I initially heard of intermittent fasting from Mercola.com. Now, this one is, it's from a book called The Fast Diet, and they advocate something called the 5-2 diet. So what they're saying to do is 2 days a week, on split days, you eat only X amount of calories. So it's not like you're not eating at all, but you're eating a very small amount of calories on these days. But the rest of the days of the week, you eat whatever you want. So, you know, I listened to the audiobook, and I really disagree with it overall. I agree with the concept of fasting, but I don't agree with the concept of eat only 400 to 600 calories in these 2 days and eat like an animal the rest of the days, and you're going to lose weight and gain benefits. You know, in comparison, you know, eating awful food 5 days a week is better than eating awful food 6 or 7 days a week. You know, there's that, you know, if you want to call that a benefit. That works. You know, anytime you can skip eating a crappy meal for a healthy meal or for no meal at all, that is a benefit. But it's some of the food they were suggesting, and it's been a while since I heard the audiobook, but some of the food they were suggesting was terrible. Saying you can eat a low-fat ice cream or a low-sugar ice cream on your fasting days as long as it's below the calorie threshold. And for me, you know, that's really just bad advice overall. So if you want to give the intermittent fasting a try, say this is brand new to you and you want to try it within a 12-hour period. Whatever your schedule may be, all of our schedules are different. I'm sure not all of you are up at 5 a.m. doing a radio show or a podcast or whatever you want to call it. But let's just say you are. First of all, I would highly, highly take a look at the role that breakfast is playing in your life and figuring out, do you need to eat within an hour or 2 hours of waking up? Most of us probably don't. But if you say, well, I got to eat before I go to work, is that true? Is that really true? Can you start skipping breakfast and having your first meal out during your first work break? But anyway, you know, figure out a 12-hour period. Be it if it's, you know, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. or, you know, for most people, it'd probably be more appropriately 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Figure that out, and then make sure there's a 2-hour gap between eating and sleeping. Some people say 1 hour is sufficient, which it could be for a lot of people. Other people say do at least 3 hours. I'd say minimum 2 hours. So if you're going to bed at 10, waking up, I don't know, everyone gets different sleep hours. Say going to bed at 10, waking up at 7. And you want to have that, go to work at 9 a.m. You want to have that breakfast at 8. 8 is the start, 8 p.m. is the cutoff. And when I say the cutoff, that's when you're swallowing your last bite, not when you're starting your last meal. Then 10 p.m. at the earliest is bed. So that's a good place to give it a start. So if you want to, you know, the book The Fast Diet, it's available. I got the audio copy, the audio version at the library for free, so I got to listen to it. If that's your interest, where you want to eat like you normally do 5 days a week and just fast twice a week, listen to the audiobook, but put your own personal healthy spin on it. Don't take the advice of you can eat ice cream as long as it's under X amount of calories, because that's just really bad advice. But if you want to get another context, give it a listen. So real quick, I'm on Wikipedia, and it's giving variations. So it says, in some contexts, Fasting allows the consumption of a limited amount of low-calorie beverages such as coffee or tea. And I do remember reading that too. You know, coffee is not something you want to be putting in your body in large amounts on a daily basis. You know, I'm as much of a coffee addict as everyone else. I shouldn't even say it like that out loud because then I'm just reaffirming it. But, you know, I have a goal to get off of coffee 100% this year, get off of cane sugar 100% this year, get off of corn chips 100% this year, or any type of chip. All those, you know, the sugar and the chips are occasional snacks. You know, I feel them when I eat them. I'm extremely bloated after eating chips. And, it's, you know, when I do sugar, I get extremely lethargic, and I'm working on getting away. Even though these are occasional foods, people say, hey, man, you got to live. You got to enjoy these foods. You know what? I don't want to feel bad after I eat a food. Like I said before on the show, we avoid GMOs for the possible long-term effect of them. So let's start avoiding food when we're feeling the immediate effect of them. But anyway, so in context with the 5-2 diet or intermittent fasting, you know, you might want to avoid coffee on those days. But going back to this quick Wikipedia blurb, one form of intermittent fasting, alternate day fasting, ADF, involves a 24-hour fast followed by a 24-hour non-fasting period. This is sometimes referred to as every other day fasting or every other day feeding. Alternate day calorie restriction may prolong lifespan. Modified fasting involves limiting calorie intake 20% of normal on fasting days rather than none at all. A study suggests that this regimen may retain most of the benefits of intermittent fasting. The scientific literature for intermittent fasting in its various forms was extensively reviewed in 2014. Another form involved eating only one meal per day. So I'd say the eating only one meal per day is really more in line with fasting versus the calorie restriction, because I don't really think that's fasting. You know, fasting is no food for X amount of time. More generally, forms may choose to specify various ratios of fasting to non-fasting periods. The BBC Two Horizon documentary, Eat, Fast, and Live Longer, covered people who committed to fasting 2 non-consecutive days per week, known as the 5-2 diet. People consumed 400 to 500 calories for women, or for men, 500 to 600 calories during the days of fasting. During feeding days, the diet was regular, which meant it was probably awful. But again, I'm sure they got more benefits than eating garbage 7 days a week versus 5 days a week. Now, there's a little bit more available for the actual 5-2 diet. It says the diet specifies a low-calorie consumption, sometimes described as fasting for 2 days a week, which should not be consecutive, but allows unmoderated eating for the other 5 days. Men may eat 600 calories on fasting days, and women 500. Typical fasting day may include a breakfast of 300 calories, such as 2 scrambled eggs with ham, water, green tea, or black coffee, and a lunch or dinner of grilled fish or meat with vegetables amounting to 300 calories. Excuse me. Proponents say that fasting for only 2 days a week may be easier for dieters to comply with the non-daily calorie restriction. And see, you got to take, again, yeah, I'm not going to keep repeating myself, but take the concept and put a healthy spin on it. Eating ham and scrambled eggs? No thanks. No thanks, Jack. But, you know, having 5 days of unrestricted calories, yeah, make them healthy. Make them healthy calories. Get some good legumes in there. Get some good raw foods in there. Lots of good vegetables and fruits that your body responds well to. Some awesome green smoothies. Eat as much as you want. And just, you know, to be clear on my fasting, there's no calorie restriction. I eat as much as I want. I usually stick with the 2 green smoothies and the big meal in between. But if I want more, I'll eat more. The worst thing you can do for a diet is be hungry. Any, you know, with the exception of fasting, any diet that you're strictly going on calories that's making you hungry is not going to work. But what I found, too, the first time I did the intermittent fasting, how mental hunger can be. And I'm really only speaking from a standpoint of, you know, the American standard lifestyle and diet. I'm not talking about hungry kids in Africa or whatever hypothetical, or not hypothetical, whatever situation you haven't experienced personally that you could use to criticize this, is that for Americans, at least, and probably a lot of other developed countries, breakfast, lunch, and dinner is marketing. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner is not, it's not encoded into human DNA. So when we think that we need breakfast, lunch, and dinner, that for most of us could just be the case. We think we need those, where most of us could probably be okay with a brunch and a dinner. So the first time I did fasting, you know, I was at the job, and my normal break time came up. And I noticed it was almost time for break, and only then did my stomach begin to rumble for food. And I said, oh man, this sucks, I'm hungry. Then I said to myself, you know what, you're just going to have to be hungry then, because you're going to do this. And as soon as that thought processed in the mind, hunger dissipated. I was no longer hungry within a second. So it's a lot mental. Let's play devil's advocate for a second. Came across an article the other day from natureworldnews.com titled Intermittent Fasting Diet Leads to Weak Immune System. Hey, maybe. Let's be open-minded. Let's review all information. New research suggests that intermittent fasting or 5-2 diet isn't a healthy way of losing weight. The 5-2 diet requires people to reduce calorie intake on 2 days of the week. Promoters of the diet say that it's easy to follow and helps reduce weight. The fasting diet is also endorsed as a safe and effective way of reducing blood pressure, increasing lifespan, and even losing weight. Researchers at the University of Bath have found that calorie restriction is known to extend lifespan, but reducing food intake could lead to weaker immune system and a decreased ability to fight infection. The study is published in the journal Evolution. For the study, researchers looked at 4 stress and immunity genes in, ready for this, fruit flies that are associated with increased lifespan. These genes are often cited by nutrition experts while promoting starvation diets. Their research on the flies showed that exposure to a fungus led to an increased immune system response. The activation of immunity and stress-related genes led to an increased lifespan of the flies. In the long run, the flies were left with a weak immune system, which affected their ability to fight infection. Researchers say that the genes that they study are also found in humans, so the study findings might have implications for human health as well. Many studies have documented benefits of diet restriction and antioxidant consumptions, but there is a lack of data on levels of illness in people administered these anti-aging treatments, said Nick Priest, lecturer in biology and biochemistry at the university. According to a news release, we know that certain stresses such as starvation or exposure to pathogens can extend life and increase fertility, but we have found, ironically, that it has a trade-off in terms of immune function. So, you know what? I'm not a fruit fly. I think this is a silly article, and it's very misleading. The title of the article, and again, this is at the show notes, which will be posted at healthconspiracy.com later today if you're listening live. If you're not listening live, probably by the time you're listening to this. But it's the article is titled Intermittent Fasting Leads to a Weak Immune System, where it should be titled Intermittent Fasting Leads to a Weak Immune System in Fruit Flies. Now, you know, I don't support the use of animals in feeding studies, but I do. When people do it, I use that research. I use their studies in my research, but, you know, when you're feeding a pig or rats one form of a diet, you know, let's just say typically if you're feeding rats GMOs, then a control group non-GMOs, and there's a significant difference in immune function or vital organs or cancer, then you're comparing two groups. When you're feeding fruit flies, or, you know, not even feeding them, like, This is pretty idiotic. It's you're exposing fruit flies to fungus, and saying that makes intermittent fasting weak. Let's go over some of these articles, comments, because sometimes I really enjoy reading comments. This is crap reporting, says Bill. The fasting diet produces longer life. The weakened immune system means the immune system is normalized, not overprovoked, i.e. autoimmunity. The writer here is inexperienced. And, you know, just like, I'm not a stickler on grammar, because sometimes I'll write an article, then I'll post it on a website, then I'll read it, and I'll say, oh, that, you messed that up. But like right at the beginning of the article, when it says, a new research suggests that intermittent fasting, instead of saying new research suggests, a new research, or it should say a new study, and there's not even a name of the reporter here. I'd say, yes, this is an inexperienced reporter that doesn't know what they're talking about and probably shouldn't be writing articles like this. But it is what it is. Let's look at all information with an open mind and critique it as such. Next comment. Humans are not fruit flies. I've been intermittent fasting for 3 years. Water fast, 24 hours twice a week. I've dropped 40 pounds, and all my biometrics are within normal range. Oh, and I haven't had a single cold in 3 years now. Not one. What was that about immunity? Who funded this study? That's a good point. So it was done by the University of Bath. But they don't... There is no... Again, let's cite some sources. There's no link to an actual study on here. Okay, University of Bath, Journal of Evolution. Okay, so the citation is there, but we need a link, would be nice as well. So here, a troll to that guy's comment says, I'm happy to hear the report of your non-controlled study that incorporates anecdotal data with N equals 1. I'm sure it will change the course of the field of nutrition. And someone comments on that. Neither does the study of this article, which doesn't involve actual fasting. And this is, let me comment on the troll here, because this is what gets me about quote-unquote science. You know, the science, not real science, the cult of science, is that life experience doesn't matter. Life experience doesn't mean jack. If it's not controlled, if it's not something that can be measured, because fruit flies being exposed to fungus means intermittent fasting bad. Someone actually doing it and receiving the benefit means, oh, intermittent fasting is not good. That's not a controlled study. All right, the comments just got overtaken by silly ads. No way here. Okay. I'll move on. Every weight loss diet weakens the immune system. Intermittent fasting is more of a lifestyle than a diet and can be done without restricting calories after reaching your desired goal. One research says it's good and restarts the immune system. Now another stating it weakens it. Two research organizations, 1 month with different results. I don't believe this study. If a person has obesity, risk versus benefits balance, inclined to losing weight, drinking a lot of water during intermittent fasting. Visceral obesity is a big health risk because abdominal fat generates metabolic disease and doctor's disease. Okay. The flies in the face of another study that has shown in human beings that has prolonged fasting 3 to 4 days restarts the immune system. Apparently, the body breaks down all those damaged immune cells during the fast and triggers stem cells to regenerate new immune cells. The fly study involves exposure to fungus and is only abstractly linked to fasting, and that both are stressors. This line of thinking is absurd and obviously wrong in the light of the more complete study on humans. That was very, very, very well put. And we're going to get to that study right now. Particularly because I'm becoming more and more of an advocate for fasting, just because I feel so great when I do it. I never feel bad. You might, I mean, some people might feel bad at first if they're detoxing, but I just feel awesome when I fast. I feel great all the time. You know, if, unless I hit the snooze button too many times or I drink too much coffee. Other than that, or I eat sugar or chips, organic nonetheless. But other than that, I really do feel good all the time, most of the time. But when I fast, I feel awesome. And I've been implementing intermittent fasting for the past couple of weeks. I stopped doing it because I started lifting weights again and thought I needed to eat more and more food. My body and mind wasn't responding to that. But for the fasting itself, so my goal is to eventually fast about 3 months out of the year. So how would I do that, you may ask? Am I going to go 90 days without eating? No. So I briefly said it last show, but I'll just go over it again real quick. 1 week in the month, Saturday, Sunday, well, basically Friday evening to Monday morning, no food. No food every Wednesday. So from Tuesday evening to Thursday morning, no food. Then once a quarter, go a full seven, I'd say about full 7 days. Instead of doing the weekend, just let it continue through to the following weekend. But I'm not just going to hop right into that. So there's more research on my part before I get into it to that level. But in the meantime, I'm going to start with 1 week in the month. So if I could do that successfully for 3 months, then I'm going to add every two Wednesdays. We do that successfully for 3 months, I'm going to add every Wednesday. Once that's successful, that's a total of 9 months, assuming that I can pull it off and don't fail. Then I'll every quarter I'll add a day to that weekend fast. So start off with Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Next quarter add Tuesday, then Wednesday, then Thursday, then Friday. And it's a long time, but hey man, that's what I try to get the message across to people, is that you are going to be alive for the next 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years. Taking a year or two to slowly but surely fix your diet in a way where your subconscious programming will slowly but surely accept it is not a long time. It's a very short period of time compared to your life. So I'm going to do the math on that real quick. So every Wednesday, out of 52 weeks, that's 52 days. So then we do 24 days for every weekend of the year. And I should be smart enough to not do this with the calculator, but it's early and I'm being lazy right now. Okay, so then we add another 20 days for the extra 5 days, or no, another 16 days, because you already got Wednesdays in there. For the full 7 days you'll be doing, I'll be doing, so that's 92 days. So out of 365 days, that is roughly a fourth of the year. Yeah, about almost exactly 25% of the year. So it's an experiment I'm going to slowly but surely get into. And, you know, during that time, I'll drink lots of water, water with fresh lemon squeezed into it, maybe water with some essential oils. Water with apple cider vinegar, lots of herbal tea, caffeine-free herbal tea, and I'm open to juice as well. There's a whole thing with juice. People say, oh, you're getting nothing but sucrose and or fructose, and it's high glycemic load. I don't know about that. I never drank a juice and got all shaky and anemic. But I've drank a sugary drink and gotten like that, so there is a difference. Not all sugar is created equal, you silly, silly person. But I got this article in front of me from The Telegraph. Fasting for 3 days can regenerate entire immune system, study finds. A person's entire immune system can be rejuvenated by fasting for as little as 3 days, as it triggers the body to start producing new white blood cells, the study suggests. Fasting for as little as 3 days can regenerate the entire immune system, even in the elderly. Scientists have found in a breakthrough described as remarkable. Although fasting diets have been criticized by nutritionists for being unhealthy, new research suggests starving the body kickstarts stem cells into producing new white blood cells, which fight off infection. And I'll say this, part of that is because, based on my previous research, is when your body's digesting food, there's other stuff it's unable to do. So when you give your body a break from digestion, it's able to do stuff like produce new white blood cells to repair and replace old cells. And that's why people say avoid sugar, because sugar is such a tax on your immune system. It makes you easier to get infections because the immune system is weakened. So as it's fighting the sugar, it may be unable to fight off some other sickness. Hence, eating sugar could lead you to getting sick, especially if you're eating it on a daily or more regular basis. Scientists at the University of Southern California say the discovery could be particularly beneficial for people suffering from damaged immune systems, such as cancer patients on chemotherapy. It could also help the elderly whose immune system becomes less effective as they age, making it harder for them to fight off even more common diseases. And I'll say this too. This is why when you're sick, you lose your appetite. I remember being a kid and, my parents doing the best they could, trying to get me to eat when I was sick. Well, the reason you're not hungry because your immune system, because your body doesn't want to digest food because it needs that strength to fight off the infection that your body's going through at that time. The researchers say fasting flips a regenerative switch, which prompts stem cells to create brand new white blood cells, essentially regenerating the entire immune system. It gives the okay from stem cells to go ahead and begin proliferating and rebuild the entire system, said Professor Valtier Longo, professor of, I don't know what that word is, gerontology and biological sciences at the University of California. And the good news is the body got rid of the parts of the system that might be damaged or old, the inefficient parts, during the fasting. Now, if you start a system heavily damaged by chemotherapy or aging, fasting cycles can generate literally a new immune system. And that's a quote, I guess, from the researcher. It doesn't say. Prolonged fasting forces the body to use stores of glucose and fat, but also breaks down a significant portion of white blood cells. During each cycle of fasting, this depletion of white blood cells induces changes that trigger stem cells-based regeneration of a new immune system cells. In trials, humans were asking to regularly fast for between 2 and 4 days over a 6-month period. Scientists found that prolonged fasting also reduced the enzyme PKA, which is linked to aging, and a hormone which increases cancer risk and tumor growth. We could not predict that the prolonged fasting would have such a remarkable effect in promoting stem cell-based regeneration of the hemopoietic system, added Professor Long. When you starve, the system tries to save energy. And one of the things it can do to save energy is to recycle a lot of the immune cells that are not needed, especially those that may be damaged, Dr. Longo said. What we started noticing in both our human work and animal work is that the white blood cell count goes down with prolonged fasting. Then when you refeed, the blood cells come back. So we start thinking, well, where does it come from? Fasting for 72 hours also protected cancer patients against the toxic impact of chemotherapy. While chemotherapy saves lives, it causes significant collateral damage to the immune system. The result of this study suggests that fasting may mitigate some of the harmful effects of chemotherapy, said the co-author, Tanya Dorth, assistant professor of clinical medicine at USC Norris Comprehensive Cancer Center and Hospital. More clinical studies are needed because dietary interventions should be undertaken only the guidance of a physician. We are investigating the possibility that these effects are applicable to many different systems and organs, not just the immune system, added Professor Longo. However, some British experts were skeptical of the research. Dr. Graham Rook, professor of immunology at the University College of London, said the study sounded improbable. Chris Mason, professor of regenerative medicine at ULC, said there is some interesting data here. It sees that fasting reduces the number and size of the cells, and refeeding at 72 hours saw a rebound. That could be potentially useful because that is not such a long time that would be terribly harmful to someone with cancer. But I think the most sensible way forward would be to synthesize this effect with drugs. I'm not sure fasting is the best idea. People are better eating on a regular basis. This stuff never ceases to amaze me. Don't eat for 3 days. Don't follow the advice of eating for 3 days. Take drugs. Like, this guy really says that, and he's probably taken serious by a lot of people. Dr. Longo added, Dr. Longo added, there's no evidence at all that fasting will be dangerous, while there's strong evidence that it is beneficial. I receive emails from hundreds of cancer patients who have combined chemo with fasting, many with the insistence of oncologists. Thus far, the great majority have reported doing very well, and only a few have reported some side effects, including fainting and a temporary increase in liver markers. Clearly, we need to finish the clinical trials, but it looks very promising. And I like here under it, there's a video, and the headline says, Fast diet promises weight loss, but is this fad unhealthy? Let me tell you something, Jack. That's the third time I use the word Jack in this show. I'm not a religious man, and I don't cite the Bible much, but they talked about fasting in the Bible. They talked about, and I don't even know if Jesus existed, but they talked about Jesus fasting for 40 days. So we're going back thousands of years. So let's not use the word fad for something that's been around before your great, 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 great grandparents were even a sperm in their daddy's testicles. Excuse my crudeness, but hey, it's not a fad. It's something that's been lost in time, I would say. But let's switch gears. When I was at the Natural Organic Healing Center the other night, filming Health Conspiracy TV, someone was telling me about, 3D printing and how there'll be 3D printing houses soon. And I think that's a very, very interesting concept. So last night, when looking for articles to talk about, came across an article from Mike Adams from Natural News. And it said, the headline is Natural News launches 3D print farm in Texas to produce functional parts for revolutionary inventions. This is kind of a big deal. Says, it's official. As of today, Natural News has a print farm up and running near Austin, Texas, producing small but steady quantities of the very same 3D printable parts the world will soon be able to download for free at foodrising.org. Photos below show some of the parts we have begun to produce via 3D printing. These parts will be offered to the public at a very reasonable price. At the same time, the downloadable objects are also available for free. You can choose to print your own for free or buy them from us already printed, or pay a friend to print them for you. Why Texas is a natural choice for entrepreneurs who believe in liberty. The Natural News Print Farm is based in a business-friendly state of Texas where we are creating jobs like crazy and bringing innovative new technology to one of the few states that still respects basic liberties and fundamental entrepreneurship. The Natural News Texas-based 3D print farm is secure with numerous finely honed firearms only carried on the hips of numerous people who don't F around when it comes to security, so we fully expect no thefts to take place here. God bless Texas yet again. We also gave some local sheriff's deputies a tour of our facility, and they loved it. The home of the Defense Distributed Project, led by Cody Wilson, inventor of the world's first 3D printed firearm. The ability of private citizens to print their own plastic objects drives control freaks crazy and sends freedom-hating politicians and to seizures and fits. My own inventions have nothing to do with weapons and everything to do with food, self-reliance, and homegrown medicine, and even food-based supplements. The revolution launches at foodrising.org with freely downloadable object files. The timetable for the launch, we originally thought February 15th, but now it's looking like the last week in February. We're pushing hard to make sure everyone can get these systems up and running in time for spring in the Northern Hemisphere. Here are some of the photos of the actual parts being produced. So, again, go to naturalnews.com or healthconspiracy.com. The link will be in the show notes. Read Natural News to learn what works in 3D printing. That's why everything I learn about successful printing will be passed on to you in the form of these articles. My goal is to help you avoid all trials and mistakes I've made in 3D printing, and help you get up to speed with it as quickly and reliably as possible. That's why I'm also testing a variety of filaments, bed adhesive materials, glue sticks, etc., print speeds and temperatures, and so on. Whatever works best will be openly communicated with Natural News readers so that you can replicate my results and print these amazing inventions yourself. So the website, again, the website for that to see what they're actually printing is foodrising.org. So this is a pretty interesting concept to where it's a game changer for big corporations and, you know, for people that don't have the funds to get stuff like this. You know, that's kind of what gets me about it, in part what he says about control freaks don't want people printing this stuff. Because I don't even really think that's as much about economics as it is about control to not allow people to evolve and improve their lives because they don't have the money for stuff. So people that have the money for something that could be 3D printed may, you know, those people might probably just still buy it because they can afford to. And then the people that unfortunately are not in the position for that, they don't have to worry about if they can afford it or not, if they can get it 3D printed. It's a pretty interesting topic. Pretty amazing that you can print parts for a farm now. Speaking of farming, it's pretty smooth transition, would you agree? No, speaking of farming, if you're going to farm at home, I'm guessing you're not going to grow anything GMO, and that's probably a good idea because a recent study came out showing GMO is linked to vital organ damage. So I have an article here from the dailymeal.com. New study finds very strong link between GMOs and vital organ damage. A new study published in the Turkish Journal of Biology provides strong evidence that GMO corn and soy may damage vital organs. I'm trying to read his article, and this damn social thing is right in the middle of the screen. Why do people do this? This makes me not want to come back to your website when your Facebook and Twitter and your Pinterest thing is in the middle of what I'm trying to read on your website. Pet peeve of mine. Excuse me. I'll do the best I can. A new study could potentially poke holes in the pro-GMO argument. A group of researchers in the National Center in Egypt have just published a study that looks at biological impact of feeding rats a GMO-based diet and compares the health of their vital organs with those of rats who are fed a non-GMO-based diet. The results are not pretty, and the GMO-based diet over the course of 30, 60, and 90-day periods seemingly caused significant histopathological, biochemical, and cytogenetic damages in all examined tissues. Some of the results of the study included feeding rats the GM diet for 30 days caused slight damage to the liver tissue. Rats fed GM BT maize over three generations suffer noticeable damage to the liver and kidneys and alterations in the blood biochemistry. A marked increase in the levels of serum AST and ALT was observed in rats fed the GM diets for 30, 60, or 90 days. Increased level of these two transferases are known to be an indicator of liver damage. The GMO diet was also associated with increased ratio of DNA fragmentation in the liver cells when compared to the control group. Researchers concluded that there are health hazards linked to the ingestion of diets containing genetically modified components. So, you know, with that alone, that's enough reason. To proceed with caution. You know, if this is, I'm just, you know, I get amazed by these promoters of genetically modified organisms that defend this, and they come up with excuses, and they say, oh, hey, it's over a lifetime. You know, it's like, you know, how do you say it? Well, humans have been eating GMOs for years, and no one's died from GMOs yet. That would be the same as saying, I've been smoking cigarettes for years, and I've had no health effects from it. Hey, they were saying the same thing about GMOs now that they were saying in the 50s about tobacco. You know what? Eat all the GMOs you want, but quit lying to people. I don't know how to respond to these people. But I will read this study and then re-report on it next week, because I'm not big on just going off articles. Again, I got into this whole activism, you know, life of mine from actually reading GMO studies and seeing that they were accurate and reading the quotes from the actual researchers. But here's two comments. So I'm not going to say they're trolls because I don't know that yet, but let's they look like they're both pro-GMO. So Jeff says, Joanna, I must believe that you did not read the study or perhaps don't have sufficient training in science to understand the glaring flaws. From the methods, the experimental material consisted of laboratory diet of mainly 60% yellow maize and 34% soybeans. The major nutritional contents of the laboratory diet were 22% protein, 3.48% fat, and 3.71% fiber. Currently, GM varieties of yellow maize and soybeans are produced for animal feed. Another well-balanced diet containing wheat with the same nutritional value as the laboratory diet was used as the non-GMO diet. In other words, the rats supposedly exposed to GMOs were fed diets composed primarily of corn and soy, while the control rats were fed diets of wheat. There was no effort made to distinguish the amount of transgenic food in the diet. PCR can detect minute quantities well below 1%. Also, since the protein content was well above that of soy, corn, or wheat, additional unmeasured supplements were included in both groups. One needs to go no further than to know that no useful information will be derived from this study. This would fail any high school science fair project. Probably the reason a group of obscure scientists published this in an unknown journal from Turkey. A real study would use isogenic lines that are nearly identical in genetics except for the presence of absence of transgene grown in the same field at the same time to reduce environmental effects. If you look at the results, you will see that there is no dosage effect. That is, the rats fed the GMO diet for 90 days typically exhibited lower values for perimeters measured than rats fed for 60 days on the same diet, another glaring red flag. I also realize you must not have read the paper as no studies were done over three generations in this paper, despite your written claim. You know, that's a fair comment, and that is doubles down on why I want to read the study. There's another Yeah, there's another study or another comment. It's just kind of mimicking the other guy's comment. Let's be fair. That is a fair assessment on it, but fair enough to make me have to read this study myself before I can really blast out this article too much. But either way, just by this article, that's enough to make me say, first time on it, let's avoid the GMOs in the future. But again, this is one article referring to one study that may or may not be legitimate versus the dozens of studies that I read that are legitimate, and the animal feeding studies that the biotech industry acts like don't exist, or even the farmer who switched from non-GMO, from GMO soy to non-GMO soy. I forget the country, but his name's Borat Peterson, and just so many positive effects or so many benefits from that. The biotech industry acts like that guy doesn't exist. So, Jeff and the other guy in the comments below, eat all the GMOs you want. We don't need you to reproduce. But I wish you wouldn't do that, because from one human to another, I love you. Okay, that's not weird to say. Hey, that's it, man. I'm going to wrap this show up. Be back Monday. I'm going to play episode 1 of Health Conspiracy TV. Check healthconspiracy.com very shortly, or in a couple hours later today, for the links of all the articles that were talked about today. And this is Nick Brannigan signing off. See you next time.